Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. Look at that, guys. Dark outside. But now, I know my feelings on daylight savings time, and I get it right every now and then, so I believe we are now officially out of daylight savings time. We were in DST from whenever the calendar flips over until Sunday morning, very early Sunday morning, and we are now no longer in daylight saving time, and I'm fine with it being like this year-round. But there are people, and I talk to them every day, lots of people that get, I believe, irrationally upset about the time change. And, you know, I get so excited when we do flip the actually, I like it more when we get more daylight in the afternoon, because I'm going to be in here working regardless in the morning, whether it's dark or light outside. But still, there's something about the time change that's exciting to me. So I'm probably one of the very few that thinks they should just keep it the way it is right now. No need changing anything that we've been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't know. You're probably on the opposite side of me, just like everyone else. You like this changing in the time, don't you?
No, I don't. It gets dark at 5:30, 5:35, and I get used to it after about a month. You know, but when you walk outside at 5:30 in the afternoon and you are used to it being light, I don't care for it.
Well, you know, more SEC and really colleges all over the nation probably like the earlier nighttime, because they get to use those fancy scoreboards and lights that they've all set up in their stadiums instead of just waiting for the 6:30 kickoff, and then you get to turn the lights on at halftime. Now, even the 2:30 kickoffs have to start warming those lights up by about 3:30 in the afternoon. So why spend all that money on the lights if no one's going to get to watch them? And probably some SEC school leaders that are happy about the time change. And lots of SEC, at least half of the SEC coaches this week, very happy with how things turned out in their week six games. The other half of the coaches, obviously, not so happy because they lost. And we had a lot of not close games in the SEC this week, pretty much across the board. Maybe not blowouts. There were certainly some blowouts, but I don't think any games finished in the single digits as far as one team getting, you know, having a close game with another team. We had a lot of really not close games this weekend is what I'm trying to say. But the new top 25 rankings out from this weekend, and it was a busy week in college football. Clemson had a close call without their starting quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Alabama shut out Mike Leach for the first time in his 19-year coaching career. And Auburn handing LSU its worst loss since 1996. So let's start with that top-ranked team, the Clemson Tigers, and starting quarterback Trevor Lawrence out in Saturday's game against Boston College, and he will miss the Tigers' top five matchup versus Notre Dame this week after Lawrence tested positive for COVID-19 on Friday. Now, it was a close call, but Clemson rallied to defeat Boston College 34-28 after falling behind by 18 in the second quarter. Tigers still ranked number one in the latest AP Top 25 poll, but the gap between them and the rest of the league is definitely shrinking, Corey. Clemson received 33 of 62 first-place votes. Number two-ranked Alabama earned the other 29 first-place votes after shutting out Mississippi State 41-0. But as of right now, top five remains unchanged. Clemson number one, Alabama number two, Ohio State number three, followed by Notre Dame at four, and Georgia five. And I have a feeling that you think Alabama should be the top-ranked team in the nation.
I'm going to say that right now, Clemson's still the number one team in the nation. I'm not going to penalize Clemson for their number one future quarterback prospect being out with COVID-19. You have to be impressed. Just because he was out doesn't mean that the defense had to check out either.
Right.
But they found a way to get it done, and they proved by coming back down 18 points, finding a way to change history for themselves. And I think they would have gotten a pass even if they would have lost. But, again, them being able to step up to the plate, come back from behind, and win a game, it sets up that 1-4 matchup with Notre Dame, and I would love to see strength on strength. But we're not going to see that type of matchup because he has to sit out this week due to COVID-19. Notre Dame has an opportunity to move up the polls and to take advantage of Trevor Lawrence being out. But in no way, shape, form, or fashion can I penalize Clemson during these 2 weeks that Trevor Lawrence is out.
And Notre Dame now has the longest win streak in all of the NCAA. I think they've won 13 in a row now, and as you said, ranked fourth after beating Georgia Tech 31-13. But we were wondering what would happen with Lawrence out, and a highly touted freshman quarterback behind him who took his place in Saturday's game, DJ Uiagalelei, who I think he was the second highest rated prospect coming out in that class as far as quarterbacks are concerned, with Bryce Young being the top rated prospect in this year's quarterback class. And Uiagalelei, although he had some growing moments Saturday, still finished with a heck of a stat line: 30 of 41, 342 yards passing and 2 touchdowns. But for Clemson, it was all about the running back, Travis Etienne, who we will be seeing in the NFL come next year. He had a great day in the air and on the ground, 84 yards rushing with 1 touchdown, but also, more importantly for Clemson on Saturday, 7 receptions for 140 yards and 1 touchdown. And to me, that means he is without a doubt the second best running back in all of the NCAA, because my money right now for best running back in the NCAA goes to Alabama's own Najee Harris. And we'll talk about him quite a bit when we get to the Heisman odds here in just a little bit, but also when we break down Mississippi State and Alabama with the Tide shutting out the Bulldogs 41-0. Looking at the rest of the top 10, Cincinnati is ranked 6th, and a defensive beatdown week after week for Cincinnati. You know, they were good back when Butch Jones was the head coach there, and they've had some good years since, but I don't think anyone saw the domination coming their way with their win over Memphis on Saturday. 49-10 win for Cincinnati. And we talk about teams from the American Athletic Conference year in and year out. It's normally Central Florida or Memphis. This year, I think Cincinnati has a real shot if they continue to play the way they're playing, and if there's some conference-on-conference violence within conferences in the Big Ten and Pac-12 and Big 12, like we've seen in the Big 12 a lot this year, I could really see Cincinnati sneaking in and grabbing that fourth playoff spot.
You know, with everything that's going on with COVID-19 and teams playing these late schedules, only 8 conference games, 10 conference games, some conference games, only 6, I'm looking at a situation to where, to me, Cincinnati is playing good football. And during a normal regular season, I think they would have a chance to be, like Tim Brando said, that fly in the ointment. But I still don't see them being able to make it to the college football playoffs.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Without those out-of-conference games to kind of, you know, not one game against even, you know, anybody in the SEC. I guess if you take their standard AAC schedule and they get a win over a Texas A&M or, heck, even a South Carolina or a Missouri, you're saying that would do more for their resume to get into that championship game. But just by playing AAC teams, even with a couple decent teams there in Memphis and Central Florida, you don't think that's enough to get them in the final?
I don't see that at this point in time, because, again, you're looking at the overall history of the college football playoffs, and outsiders really are not very welcome. You're pretty much going to have to be a Power 5 guy to get in, and under these guidelines, especially when you start talking about monetarily, that's a whole different ball game. And you can say coulda, woulda, shoulda, even with Central Florida running the table and going undefeated a few years ago, claiming that national championship, I still don't see Cincinnati having an opportunity, because even a 2-loss Alabama team or a 2-loss Clemson or a 1-loss Clemson team or a 1-loss Notre Dame or Ohio State, to me, are still better than an undefeated Cincinnati team.
Well, an SEC team hoping to sneak into that Final Four, Texas A&M, who's played well since that loss to Alabama. They're up to number 7 this week after beating Arkansas 42-31. Florida ranked 8th. The Gators crushed Missouri 41-17 on Saturday and also got into a little tussle at halftime. We'll talk about that in the show. BYU is ranked 9th and Wisconsin 10th. Even though it looks like the Badgers are going to have a heck of a time even getting back out onto the field. Auburn ranked 24th this week. They returned to the rankings after 2 weeks being on the outside of the top 25. Good things like that happen when you route a former national champion 48-11 like the Auburn Tigers did to the LSU Tigers on Saturday. And then looking around, from the forest view here, the SEC leads all conferences with 5 ranked teams. Big Ten and Big 12 each have 4 ranked teams, although the Big 12 now has no undefeated teams remaining after Oklahoma State lost to Texas Saturday. ACC has 3 ranked teams, Pac-12 has 2, and the Sun Belt Conference, one ranked team. The Coastal Carolina Chanticleers come in at number 15 this week, and that sets up a huge game for our South Alabama Jaguars this Saturday. They travel to play at those 15th-ranked Chanticleers this Saturday night, 7 o'clock on ESPNU. The Jags, 17-point underdogs. But what a win that would be for Steve Campbell and his crew at South Alabama. All right, a scary moment in practice this morning in Oxford, Mississippi for a former Saraland tight end. We'll talk about that. And also the punishments levied down to Florida and Missouri from the SEC office this afternoon. All of that and more coming up on Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Livewire bringing us back in. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty with you on this already dark Monday night. Ian Blair running the boards for us and delivering passionate Atlanta Falcons commentary when called upon. Ian, the people need to know, it's not just the Atlanta Falcons you're passionate about, but we're going to have to bring you in for, I don't know, my Tennessee Vols need a good shaming at some point. So if you could work up a shaming for my guys up there in Knoxville, that would be much appreciated, because it clearly worked last week. You ripped the Falcons to shreds, which was very necessary, I would say. And then they turn around and beat the divisional foe Carolina Panthers on Thursday night. So great job, Ian. That was all on you.
Squeaked out a win, and for a while there I'm watching that game while doing some college work. Man, I'm just thinking there's no way we lose this again. If we lose this again, I have to – they're going to bury me under the biggest cemetery they got. I'm going to burn everything Falcons I have, which isn't much because I'm a broke college kid, but still. So – yes.
I too, am a broke college kid 10 years after college, so I feel you on that. Now, I am going to put you on the spot really quickly here. I know you've been studying. You've got a heavy class load over there at the University of Mobile, but Calvin Ridley, update on his situation. Do you know, is he going to be out for a time? Or, like I said, I put you on the spot so you could say you don't know, and we'll find the information, but I know he went out in that game last week.
As far as I know, the results are still inconclusive.
Okay.
But
still waiting to hear from Ridley. All right, and certainly don't need another Alabama receiver going out for the year with an injury, and definitely don't want one for the Atlanta Falcons.
No.
Corey, we were talking about an Alabama legend during the break, and Paul Crane, I believe he's part of the Mobile Sports Hall of Fame as well as a couple other Hall of Fame classes, and won a Super Bowl with the New York Jets, of course, former Alabama Crimson Tide player, and he passed away over the weekend. 76 years old, died after a long illness, and I know you've met Paul Crane in the past, and you had some words.
Just an outstanding guy. I mean, he was the MC at the Crichton Optimist Club banquet that I had an opportunity to do, and just sitting down and talking with him on a couple occasions, just the wisdom and the knowledge that he shared from a football standpoint, some of the stories that he told. He was an outstanding storyteller. I hate to hear about his death, but you know, he's somebody that Bear Bryant spoke highly of as a player at Alabama, along with Joe Namath. They win a Super Bowl together with the Jets, and Joe said that he was one of the guys who was the unsung heroes for that New York Jets organization, and just hate to hear about his loss and just wish his family the best.
Yeah, we wish his family the best. And also prayers out to Ole Miss tight end DeMarcus Thomas and his family as well. Thomas today, of course, a former Saraland Spartan, played high school ball there. And this is his true freshman year with Ole Miss. He's actually played in all five games so far this season. But the tweets started to come from Oxford early on, and Ole Miss head coach Lane Kiffin was really the first one putting the news out there that Thomas suffered a serious injury this morning. I don't believe it was hard contact that caused this injury. From what I was reading, he went airborne, maybe going for a catch or for another reason, and he was pushed, I think, but not pushed hard, and that caused him to go off balance and land in a compromising situation on his head, neck area. Now, originally, Kiffin said that Thomas was unresponsive, wasn't able to feel anything in his body, but he later came back out and told the media that Thomas had some feeling and movement before he was airlifted directly to a local hospital from the practice field. And then the University of Ole Miss later came out, said that Thomas had, quote, regained movement in all of his extremities, and the physicians are optimistic. But early on today, Kiffin said he called Thomas's mom and said she would be lucky if he played football again. He was more worried about, you know, his life than he was him getting back out there on the field. It's a call that no parent or a family member or friend ever wants to get from a college practice, but Thomas suffered serious injury, it appears, this morning.
And you just keep his family in our prayers along with him, because anytime you start hearing about our local guys, I'm going to go on and on throughout the rest of this show for the entire football season about all the guys from this area code, from Stanford and the West Coast all the way to the East Coast and even down here in Florida, Kadarius Toney, and so on and so forth. We have so many people that are from our local Mobile Baldwin County high schools that are making a tremendous impact. And anytime you see somebody go down to this type of injury, you wish them the best, and glad to see that he does have movement in his extremities this evening.
And speaking of guys we're rooting for in college and in the big leagues, see the news on Marlon Humphrey, Baltimore Ravens cornerback, latest to test positive for COVID-19. Now, what's strange is he actually played every snap for the Ravens defense yesterday in their 28-24 loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Humphrey jumped on today and said, "I got the Rona. Hopefully I'll be back healthy soon." That was his comment on his Twitter page. The Ravens said that that Humphrey had begun to self-quarantine, and the organization is now in the NFL's protocol for COVID-19, said they've begun the process of contact tracing. Well, I would start with the 10 other defenders that were out there on the field most of the time with Humphrey, and also the 11 players on offense each time he took the field against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, what's strange, if you've seen over the course of this year, whether it's college ball or the NFL, it seems that when two teams are playing, at least from what I've seen, COVID-19 isn't as often being passed between the teams as it is to players within that team, especially within those position groups that they've been meeting week in and week out. I would say the Ravens probably obviously started with the defensive cornerbacks room for the Ravens with this contact tracing, and then worked their way out to the entire defense, because was it the Bills a few weeks ago that basically their entire tight end group, every tight end on the roster except for one tight end who had left the team for the birth of, I believe, his first child, maybe second child. He left the team because his wife was giving birth, and he ends up being the only Buffalo Bills tight end to not catch COVID-19. We'll have to see with this Ravens-Steelers game how many come back this week and test positive, because two of the top teams in the AFC there, obviously, and that could create some issues as we get into playoff seeding later this year. Which, by the way, the NFL talking now about some contingency plans if they have to cancel any more games this season because of COVID-19. And now, possibly looking at 8-team playoffs in each conference if they have to cancel any more games. Remember, this was the first year where they were going to have 7 teams make the playoffs in each conference, your 4 division winners and 3 wildcard teams on both sides. Now, the way they set this schedule up, where they only put the standard 17 weeks in prior to the first round of the playoffs, they didn't plan for any extra weeks after that. They're now saying they're not going to push these games back when they get canceled. Instead, if they have to, they will just have 18 playoffs on both sides, and I guess your 4 divisional winners and then the 4 other top teams in that conference will get to move on and play.
I mean, you look at the contingency plan of Major League Baseball, to where you went to a 60-game season, you changed the format to where you played the divisional series and the World Series within a quote, unquote, bubble. I see the same thing and the same problems continuing to occur for the NFL. I think the NFL is going to get to a point, as well as college football, to where you're faced with teams don't have any more bye weeks, and you're going to have to go to the contingency plan. And I just think that's my personal opinion as to how this coronavirus will continue to affect not only the NFL, but other sporting events as well.
Yeah, and it's really happening right now in college football, like you said. I mean, the SEC, they at least had somewhat of a contingency plan by tacking that extra bye week on to the end of the year. We've already seen that. It's being used right now. I believe Florida LSU will play their originally scheduled game on December 12th, and that was scheduled to be played a couple weeks ago. But if either Florida or LSU misses another game, then there's not another tack on to the end of the year. So they could be looking at something there. But then you look at the Big Ten, who just began play not this last Saturday, but the Saturday before that, and Wisconsin was able to make it out there onto the field for game one. But their second game was canceled after, I think, now 26 players and coaches within the organization have tested positive for COVID-19. The way the Big Ten got this season in, and by waiting so much longer than almost everyone else, they left themselves no room for any extra games. I mean, they're going to play nine games straight through and then have the Big Ten championship game and then right into the playoffs after that. So they're basically telling Wisconsin and Nebraska, who was set to play Wisconsin, too bad, so sad. You get the games that you're able to make it to, and then we'll decide your future based on that. So even with Wisconsin ranked 10th right now in the entire nation, they might not have much to play for by the time they get back out there on the field. If they're looking at a 5 or 4-game season and the rest of the league is able to get in 8 or 9 games, doesn't look good for the Badgers' playoff chances.
And not only the Badgers, I think when you start looking across, whether you're talking about conferences outside of the SEC or the Pac-12 or any other conference, the room for error is at zero. And you cannot continue to postpone games and say, hey, we'll make them up at a later date without pushing your conference championship and then pushing your FBS championship. And then you're looking at dollar signs that are not going to be made up. So I think that there will be some problems, and they better have some alternative plans, because if they don't, games just won't get played.
All right, coming back, more Sports Night on the way.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, this Tungavaloa segment sponsored by Corey LeBounty. Now, Corey didn't make this request, but I thought I'd sneak in some Tua and Talia Tungavaloa news. And before we get to the breakdowns of the Auburn win over LSU and the Alabama shutout win over Mississippi State, but both Tua and Talia on the field this week. And, of course, one was playing in college ball and the other getting his first start in the NFL. Let's start with Tua and yesterday. Not exactly a sterling stat line in his first game as an NFL starting quarterback. He took over as the Miami Dolphins starting quarterback over Ryan Fitzpatrick. They had a bye week last week. The news came about 2 weeks ago that he would be starting. And what a game to start your NFL career off. What a team to face, the LA Rams, and what's probably the top or second best defense in the entire league. But Tua really didn't have to do much yesterday. Dolphins get the 28-17 win. Tua ends up passing for 93 yards and his first NFL touchdown, which went to Devontae Parker yesterday, but gets the win in his first start and didn't have to do much along the way. The Dolphins had a passing touchdown, a rushing touchdown, a special teams touchdown, and a defensive touchdown in the victory. I think it's the second time in franchise history that's happened. So Tua didn't put up the numbers we've been seeing from Justin Herbert out in L.A. or, oh man, yesterday Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals just putting it to the Tennessee Titans. But still, you want to start off with a win, and that's exactly what Tua did yesterday.
That's the only stat line that matters, that he got the W, and I was happy. I'm a Dolphins fan. That's my favorite NFL franchise. And he could have thrown for 3 yards as long as they got the win and found a way to get him out of the game healthy. He took a nice shot from Aaron Donald, found a way to lead his team to hold on. The Rams forgot to get off the plane and forgot to play football, but 4 first half turnovers will do that to you in the NFL. It'll doom you, but congratulations to Tua getting his first NFL victory.
And how about this matchup for the Dolphins coming up this Sunday? They play at the Arizona Cardinals. So you have Tua Tagovailoa taking on Kyler Murray in a battle of young quarterbacks. That ought to be a lot of fun to watch. And then of course you look at the two. Well, Miami not really known for their offense necessarily, with Brian Flores, the former Patriots defensive coordinator, being the head man in charge there. But you look out at Arizona and Cliff Kingsbury, and lots of notes of it smells like college football when Cliff Kingsbury is involved. And we're starting to see the NFL really shift towards that style of play. And that goes to show you with some of these young guys, these rookies, having great starts to their seasons.
Well, Murray and Tagovailoa know each other quite well, getting to play each other in the Orange Bowl a couple of years ago, Alabama and Oklahoma. But I love the matchup again, and I know Murray will try to one-up him and remind him, hey, look, you took one from me down in Miami. Now I want to take from you playing for Miami, the Dolphins, that is. So we'll see what happens.
And I mentioned we had news on not one, but two Tagovailoas, and Talia, who, of course, transferred up to Maryland and is the starting quarterback there now. But they had an overtime win over Minnesota on Thursday night, 45-44, and Talia with 5 touchdowns in the win. He had 394 yards passing with 3 passing touchdowns, and he also rushed in 2 touchdowns with 59 yards rushing. So Talia, although he's not playing in the SEC, he's getting his name known up there in Big Ten country.
I was happy that he made the transfer because you look in him – whoever's playing behind Mac Jones right now, you're going to play behind Mac Jones.
Yeah.
And you are going – Mac Jones, knock on wood, would have to be hurt for him not to play. And that's a situation to where Talia, he was ready to get on somebody's college football field and play now, found the right system for him and Coach Locksley up there at Maryland, and is getting it done.
If the Tide had not signed freshman quarterback Bryce Young, would Talia still be a – member of the Alabama Crimson Tide?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I strongly believe that, but you can't continue to bring in 4- and 5-star quarterbacks and somebody not get their feelings hurt by not touching the field.
Well said. All right, let's talk about some of these SEC games from this weekend and our college pick'em here at FM Talk 106.5. I've been thankful. I'm finally at the top of the pack. I've been working for this for a few years now. I knew the talent was there. The execution has not been lately, and I'm 86th in the nation now and have a good 2-game lead on everyone in the FM Talk pick'em. But one that I wish I had back this weekend was selecting the LSU Tigers over the Auburn Tigers. I wanted, with everything I had, to pick Auburn, but every time I've felt that way, Auburn has let me down in these pick'ems in the past. So I went with LSU. I know last week I said Auburn ought to be able to run the ball on them, and run the ball they did. They hand LSU their sixth. It's the sixth worst loss ever by a defending national champion, LSU's worst loss since 1996. My brother, an Air Force pilot, was 2 years old the last time LSU lost like this. And it's also Auburn's largest ever win against LSU. Included a 99-yard touchdown drive, which is the sixth in Auburn history. And three of those 99-yard drives have come with Gus Malzahn as head coach. Last week, we were talking about getting rid of Gus Malzahn, or 2 weeks ago, some still last week. And then now he's handing the defending champions their worst loss in 24 years. So what do you make of that Auburn game just from what you saw on Saturday?
Well, I tell you, Auburn did play its best game of the season by far. And it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, LSU is the defending national champion. Auburn has struggled to beat LSU. They got over that hump on Saturday, and they mashed the accelerator. And you love to see the progression in Bo Nix. You love to see the play calls that were made. And you love to see the box score with Auburn being able to run the football with some success. And they were able to throw the football with a tremendous amount of success and to kind of distribute the football across the field. I talked about Eli Stove, not only Seth Williams, but Schwartz being effective pass catchers for the Auburn Tigers. And we know the run sets up the pass, but Bo Nix played a great game, and that's what you needed out of him. And that's what you wanted to see as an Auburn Tiger fan.
Yeah. Two different stories on the quarterbacks in that game from Saturday. Of course, you had Bo Nix on the Auburn side and TJ Finley on the LSU side. But you said it. This was really Auburn and Bo Nix's first great offensive performance of the season. Really, their first good performance of the season. 300 passing yards, 206 rushing yards as a team. And at one point, they had 5 consecutive touchdown drives. Now, for most of the first half, there wasn't great football being played. It really wasn't a good game for the first at least quarter and a half. But this was all about turnovers, turning the game. And you mentioned it with the Miami Dolphins and Tua not having to do much on Saturday. Well, when your defense is playing as well as Auburn's was, and then you have a quarterback who's also playing extremely well on offense, you end up with a score like 48-11. And the other big story here, other than turnovers, LSU could not run the ball. I mean, they might miss Clyde Edwards-Helaire more than they miss Joe Burrow right now. And that might be and is a bit of an overstatement, but they just can't run the ball. They finished with 2.3 yards per carry, and they averaged 7 yards per attempt passing. Starting freshman quarterback TJ Finley had 3 turnovers. All 3 set up Auburn touchdowns. There was an interception by sophomore cornerback Nehemiah Pritchett. Defensive end Big Cat Bryant got one of those batted balls and intercepted that. And then a fumble return for a touchdown by Christian Tutt. So not only the Auburn defense firing on all cylinders and scoring and giving the Tigers offense short fields to work with, but then when you have Bo Nix, and like you said, the backup came in finally for Seth Williams. First time this year that he hasn't led in either receptions or receiving yards for the Tigers, because Schwartz and Stove also had good games.
Well, here's the question I have for you. Which is worse? Is it Mississippi State's 32 total rushing yards or LSU's 32 rushing yards? Because both of those stats in the SEC are atrocious. Mm-hmm. You cannot get it done. But, again, Auburn needed this type of confidence booster defensively. And anytime you are set up on a short field, which the Auburn defense was able to do for the offense, it helps tremendously with the exception of that 99-yard drive. You're not going to see a 100-yard rusher when you're set up on a short field like Auburn was able to do and turn LSU over the way that they were. But the thing is, getting points off turnovers, and when you get a team down, giving them no life, Auburn did a tremendous job of suffocating the LSU Tigers.
I'll answer your question. You asked which was a worse stat, Mississippi State's 32 rushing yards or LSU's. LSU's by far. I mean, Mississippi State was going up against a team that we already know is very good, if not great, defensively in the Alabama Crimson Tide. LSU was going up against a team that has given up plenty of rushing yards this year. And not only that, a game when LSU absolutely, it was so crucial that they set up the run game. You've got a young freshman quarterback starting for you. The last thing you need your quarterback to do is turn the ball over. And a good way to keep your quarterback from turning the ball over is to have a successful mm-hmm. run game. And there's just none of that happening for the LSU Tigers. Tank Bigsby, he continues to roll. Now, he didn't get a 100-yard rushing game for the fourth game in a row. That streak ended at 3, but he still rushed for 71 yards and 2 touchdowns on only 15 carries. It goes to show how well the Auburn defense was playing, that they only ran the ball 15 times with Bigsby. Got the ball in the hands of a couple other rushers throughout the game. But as a team, the Tigers have rushed for over 200 yards 4 games in a row, and you know that is exactly what this Gus Malzahn and Chad Morris offense needs in order to be successful. Because just like LSU didn't want to put the whole game on T.J. Finley, Auburn doesn't want to put the game on Bo Nix's shoulders either. Even though he played a great game on Saturday, we've seen what happens when he is the only reason for Auburn to win or lose a game.
The question I have, are the Auburn Tiger fans happy that a bye week is coming also so they can go ahead and recoup and try to get back on pace, or they come out of the bye week against Mississippi State? Is it at the right time for them?
Great question. Another one here. LSU defensive coordinator Bo Pelini, how long of a leash does he have? Listen to this stat. Most games LSU has allowed 40 or more points in a season was 3 times in 1993. They've reached that mark now in 5 games. All right, coming back, we'll break down the Alabama shutout win over Mississippi State. Also, take a look at some of this week's SEC games, and we'll wrap up Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
I remember putting this song in the rotation here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 when the Auburn Tigers basketball team fell in the Final Four to Virginia and never came out of the rotation. But I'm wondering who this weekend in the SEC will be bringing on the heartbreak, because this season ripe with upsets. We've seen it already time and time again. It's just such a strange season. I think we're going to see some more big-time upsets before this year is out. So I do want to talk about those SEC opening odds for this coming weekend's games here in just a minute. But first, we have to talk a little bit about Alabama's dominant shutout victory over the Mississippi State Bulldogs, 41-0. Now, this morning on Mobile Mornings when I was doing the sports report, I kept saying Alabama won 29-0, and I'm not sure where I got that number. Did they lead 29-0 at the half? I don't know. It was
27-0 at halftime. Okay,
so I don't know where the 29-0 came from, but believe me, I heard it from listeners out there. They said, get it right, Roll Tide, and I bowed my head in shame, because that's one thing you never do in Alabama is get the score of the Alabama game, Auburn game, South Alabama game. You don't get those incorrect. So I've got to make amends for that tomorrow. But Alabama shuts out Mississippi State 41-0. And, Corey, even without Jalen Waddle, the offense just continues to roll. Mac Jones, 291 yards passing and 4 touchdowns. All 4 of those went to wide receiver Devontae Smith, who put up just an incredible stat line, 11 receptions, 203 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Devontae actually single-handedly outgained the entire Bulldogs offense by 3 yards. The Bulldogs have had 200 total offensive yards in this game, and now Smith, the first player in SEC history with multiple 4-touchdown games. He also had 5 against Ole Miss last season.
In the history of the game, I'm going to go back and say it again. A couple of weeks ago, I said Mac Jones for Heisman, and the second best Alabama player to me is Devontae Smith. And with those type of numbers in SEC history, in the history of the SEC, Devontae Smith has also now tied Amari Cooper with the most touchdown receptions. Mm. So when you start talking about him deciding to come back for his senior year, it makes a tremendous difference, especially with Waddle going out. You know that teams are going to bracket coverage you. You know they're going to double you, and you know what's coming, and you still can't stop it. That's the what, to me, makes Devontae so explosive and the type of player that gets me so excited watching him play.
There are three teams in the entire nation that I could see possibly having a chance to beat Alabama. And I'd give two of those three teams a better chance than the other. And you know at least two of those teams, I'm sure. The Clemson Tigers, and that the caveat here is with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. The Ohio State Buckeyes, who look fantastic 2 weeks into their Big Ten season. And then I'll say if the bounce goes the right way multiple times, the Georgia Bulldogs could possibly beat Alabama. We saw Alabama put it to Georgia earlier this season. I guess, what was that, 2-3 weeks ago that they beat the stew out of the Bulldogs. But the way this Tide team is playing, no one in the SEC right now has a chance against them. I mean, just the stats from this offense, they're averaging 47 points per game and 556 yards per game, and that is in an SEC-only season. They haven't padded the stats against, you know, East Carolina or any other out-of-conference team. This Tide offense is absolutely unbelievable. And we talk about one or two players every week that have just incredible stat lines, like we are with Devontae Smith this week. But all the while, you have these backup players, and I say backup as in they don't get the lead billing every single week, but they're starters on the team. Najee Harris continues to just do what Najee Harris does. Mm-hmm. He led the team in rushing with 109 yards on Saturday on 21 carries. But you look at his stat line for the entire season, Harris has the sixth most rushing yards in the nation, the most in the SEC with 714 through six games. And even though he didn't score a rushing touchdown Saturday, still leads the nation with 14 touchdowns on the ground. So I don't know, in the week leading up to any team's game against Alabama, I don't know who they key in on. Because if you take the route that Nick Saban's taken for years, but most notably Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots, they always say they're going to take away the best part of your game. If you've got a great running back, the Patriots are going to shut that running back down, normally. If you have a great receiver, they're going to double that receiver and make sure he doesn't catch a pass all game. They did it with Ocho Cinco. They've done it over the years. If you're trying to shut down the best part of this Alabama offense, where do you even start?
You'll have nightmares as a defensive coordinator. Lane Kiffin, they were able to put up bukudas of points. That was a one-time fluke. You have not seen that type of repeat performance in Alabama's defense offensively. Again, compared to LSU's offense a year ago, they're right there even with them, and the graphics showed so in the game. So Alabama continues to roll. They'll continue to do so going in the bye week, and we'll see what happens. And I look forward to seeing Alabama move forward in a couple weeks against LSU and to see how LSU bounces back off this loss. And we'll see what South Alabama does, too, this week.
Yeah, huge game against Coastal Carolina, and the Jags 17-point underdogs to the now 15th-ranked Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. That would be a huge, huge win for the South Alabama program. But just like any team lining up against Alabama this year, they're going to need a lot of breaks to go their way if they want to pull out that victory.
You know, I love South Alabama, but Coastal Carolina is just too tough. And, you know, they're in the top 15 for a reason. South Alabama needs that breakthrough and that signature win. And in order to get it, they've had multiple opportunities, had every opportunity to win against Georgia Southern and just could not get the turnovers that they needed. But when they turned the ball over, they gave it right back to Georgia Southern. So South Alabama is going to need a miracle game or a flawless four-quarter game in order to get that W.
Well, speaking of signature wins, the two top teams in the SEC looking for one of those wins this weekend when Florida takes on Georgia in the world's largest COVID-19 outdoor cocktail party. I'm not sure whether there will be any university-sanctioned cocktail parties for this event, but I know there will probably be some. Like back when alcohol was prohibition, there's going to be some people partying for this game. But you look at the opening odds for what I think will decide the SEC East, and the Georgia Bulldogs are 5-point favorites over Florida. Now, there were some penalties handed down from the SEC for Florida's halftime brawl against Missouri this last Saturday. And other than the Florida players that were already ejected in the game, defensive lineman Zachary Carter and Antoine Powell, no other players were suspended. Those two will miss the first half of this game, and head coach Dan Mullen was fined 25 G's for psyching up the crowd and getting people's faces out there on the sideline.
Rightfully so. I liked your costume better, though, Dalton. Your costume looked better than Coach Mullins did.
I was a shark, and he was Darth Mullen, right?
He was Darth Mullen.
That fit the billing on Saturday. He became an enemy in a lot of people's eyes when normally not such a loud guy, Dan Mullen. But the other SEC games this week, Mississippi State, 16. Now 19.5-point favorites over Vanderbilt. Texas A&M, 8-point favorites at South Carolina. And the game of the week here, I say sarcastically, Tennessee playing at Arkansas. The Vols, 1.5-point favorites in that matchup. Auburn and Alabama on byes this week, but next week we'll be breaking down the big Alabama-LSU game right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Have a great week, everyone.